Classic Hits, something for the weekend. Good morning, it's Trina Murray here, and I'm joined in studio by the broadcaster and author Megan Scully. Good morning, Megan, how are you?
I'm so good, Trina, how are you?
I'm great. I've been meaning to have you in for such a long time, and I finally nabbed you to get you in to talk about your book, which I've been reading, and oh my God. Like, you've had a really, really, really tough time. So your book is called My Journey Through Loss and Grief, Broken Love. So this is all about two deaths in your family. Can you tell us, first of all, what made you write the book and a little bit about the background?
So I guess it all started on the 4th of March 2005. I was a 15-year-old girl. I just finished my junior cert mocks and I'd gone horse riding with my dad. And my brother Marcus was just home from boarding school. He was in Garbly and he had just finished his Leaving Cert mock. So we were both, I suppose, on the same page when it came to studying. Obviously, he was going to be a vet and I was doing my junior cert. So I suppose his was very, very important. But because he studied so hard, he put that kind of, I suppose, study way into me. So he went off to rugby training on that Friday. And as I said, I went horse riding with Dad. And as I was sitting on the horse, I noticed ambulances coming around. Then I kind of thought, that's a bit unusual. It's Friday evening. Where could an ambulance be going? And unfortunately, that ambulance was going to the scene of a car crash, and a car crash that my brother had been involved in. He was the passenger in the car, and our neighbour and a friend of ours was the driver. And unfortunately, Cathal lost his life straight away. Marcus went into hospital. And then in the early hours of the 5th of March, he sadly passed away due to his injuries.
In the book, Megan, you talk about going to the hospital and you didn't think that it was that serious, to even to the point that you brought Mars bars, didn't you, to give to him?
I certainly did. Mars bars were his favourite thing. He was very sporty and he always had them. And I just, we stopped in the petrol station on the way in because we didn't really know how bad it was. So we weren't, not that we were taking our time, but I think my uncle was like, I need to fill up the car just in case I need the car for going over and back. And I said, we'll get Mars bars for Marcus because he loves them, and he'll wake up in hospital. He'll obviously...
And he'll be delighted.
Yeah, and then just something instead of hospital food. So yeah, that's what I did. I bought him Mars bars, and as I said, obviously I didn't think anything at all. I just thought he maybe had a bit of a knock and maybe we'd be in hospital for a few days, but I genuinely didn't think anything else apart from death was the last thing that came to my head.
And there was just the two of you, two siblings.
Yeah, that's it.
So then you get the news that he's not going to pull through. And I remember one particular piece in the book that really had me upset. The part where you were leaving the hospital and you didn't have the change for the car park and you got stuck in the hospital where your brother had just died. And every time I go to a hospital now, I think about that. That's just horrific. But you painted a real picture in the book. How did they tell you that he died?
So we got into the hospital, we were in A&E and it was a long wait. And I remember as the time went on, loads of neighbours and friends started turning up. And I was like, gosh, it's very unusual that so many people from home were in A&E tonight, not realising why they were actually there. They were all in to see Marcus and see what was going on. And then my mum was one of 11 and my dad has quite a large family as well. So it was, A&E was literally just packed full of us. And it got to a stage where everyone kind of knew about the story and we were given a timeline. We were told by 2:45, that's when surgery would be over. So we were every 15 minutes, I'd be like, it's 15 minutes now. And we were kind of all watching the clock and we were all so positive. And then my dad was like not feeling well, so the doctors actually let him go up to another floor, and as well, it was the same floor, sorry, that Marcus was being operated on. So mum wanted to actually be closer to him, so mum said, can we stay up here? So mum, dad and some family members, so we kind of split into two, went up there. And then I'll never forget sitting in A&E and kind of chatting to everyone around and making friends. We kind of made friends with everyone in there.
Yeah.
And then my aunt came down and she looked at me and she goes, can you come up me now? And I said, oh gosh, he must be out early. I was like, he must be coming to the end of the, you know, the surgery. So I went up and she grabbed my hand. And I was like, so is he awake? Is he out? And she was like, oh, no. She goes, no, we're just going to bring you up now and your mum and dad want to see you. So I said, okay, fine. So I got up there then. And I think at this stage, mum actually says that she kind of always knew. She said once he had the accident, she said mother instinct kicked in and she said she knew it wasn't going to be a good outcome. And as we sat there and waited, the surgeon came in with a nurse and he just had to tell us all about the injuries. And then he just said, I'm sorry to say that he didn't pull through. And that was it then. And
he died in surgery.
Yeah, he died, yeah, in surgery, yeah. So we never got to, I suppose, properly say goodbye.
I know your parents had separated long before this happened, when you were quite young as well. So you were with your mom. How did your mom cope afterwards? I mean, I'm going to ask you about coping without a sibling, but I can only imagine that I'm a mom myself and I just don't know how I would deal with losing a child.
Yeah, I think, and that's one thing I say in the book as well, that there's nothing can ever compare to a mother's grief, and I understand that, and I really wanted to protect my mother, and I think that's why it took me so long to grieve, because I wanted to make sure that she was okay first. Like, she was absolutely like, it was such a sad house to live in, and that's why school for me was such an escape, because I could get away from it all. And when I was in school, I had my junior cert and then I had my leaving cert, so that kind of kept
just
me away.
A few weeks later you were doing your junior cert.
Yeah, so 5th of March we lost Marcus, and then the junior cert followed, and then I wanted to do him proud, because he made me study every weekend, and he wrote out our every time he'd come home from boarding school, he'd have our timetable done out of breakfast, study, break, study, rugby, study.
Yeah.
I wanted to do him proud. And as I said, school was a distraction, so studying kind of for me at the time was the way to get away from the grief and the sadness that was at home.
Yeah. When summer came then though, and you didn't have that to concentrate on, how was it?
I have to say my friends were absolutely superb. I think I must have lived in everyone's house, and they the same as me. So I think I'm pretty sure every single night during the summer I was either with someone or someone was with me. So there's constantly friends around. I have to say they were so supportive, considering none of them really knew what was going on, but they were all were friends of Marcus too. And then I think I decided then actually that I wanted to switch schools. So I had that distraction for the summer.
Okay.
Going to the new school. I was going from the all girls convent to the mixed local school. So my head, I was like, this is going to be great. So that kind of kept me going. Up until school start.
Did you find that people didn't really know what to say to you or to your mom? Like, you'd be in the supermarket and they might kind of look the other way almost.
Yeah, it was. So some people would come straight up to you and would have loads to say. Some people didn't know what to say. Some people said the wrong thing. And then it was just really difficult, because I know myself, even nowadays when someone passes away, I'm very quick to send a text to the person or to reach out to them, but because I know what it's like. But I know in some situations you just don't know what to say. And I've never been angry or upset at people who haven't reached out, because when they haven't gone through it, they don't understand, and you don't really expect them to either. So I think from a very young age, I had to learn that, you know, you kind of have to think of other people's feelings as well.
Is it the thing where people say things like, oh, my granny died last year, and you're kind of going, it's not the same?
Yeah, I suppose people will try make a comparison, because in some way they're trying to relate to you. And I think as well, the great thing about us being Irish is we sometimes, well, I know I word vomit and I kind of say something just comes out and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. That was really inappropriate. And then I try to backtrack. And then
it's like the way people laugh at a funeral, isn't it?
Yeah. When I talk about the death I've experienced and talk about the funerals and things, I find sometimes I get like this awkward giggle, and I'm like, I don't mean to be smiling and laughing. I was like, I'm just trying to, it's my way of dealing with it.
Mm-mm. Now, talk to me then, your dad passed away as well.
Yeah, so growing up, Dad was always had different illnesses, and he was in and out of hospital. I remember when as a child, I think I'm pretty sure I've been to nearly every hospital around Dublin, because we originally lived in Dublin, and Dad was in and out of them all. But he was always a fighter, and no matter how many times Dad went into hospital, Dad always came straight out of hospital. And, you know, they'd be like, no, Maxie, take it easy, no riding horses. And then Dad'd be like, come on, we're going horse riding. I'm like, Dad, the doctor said. And he'd be like, no, he goes, I love this, and this is something I love doing, and I'm not going to give up the things I love. So he had this real kind of, I suppose Dad was really inspiring in that sense. He didn't, I wouldn't say he didn't look after himself, but everything he was told not to do, he did anyways, because he was like, do you know what, life's for living, and why would I give up the things I love? So I guess in that sense he was right. But I think Marcus's death was the end for Dad, because I think he'd fought the good fight for so long. He had defied all the odds, but then when Marcus died, for Dad it was just, that was it. I think he just felt, you know, it was so unfair, and he just got sick and then got worse and worse. And when he got to hospital, he started staying longer, and I kept saying, you can fight this again, you've done it before. And I could even just see in his own eyes that he just hadn't the heart anymore to fight. And he did try, but he just couldn't do it anymore. And on the 12th of August in 2006, Dad passed away. And it was actually during the RDS horse show, which is his favourite event.
Yeah.
And he was a massive fan of the Aga Khan and the Puissance, and he died that night between the two of them. So in a way, we're like, okay, Dad, you know, you did it the way you wanted to do it. But yeah, I was with Dad when he died, and with him all through his illness at the end. And so it was a very different experience. Marcus was taken away from us in a crash, and we never got to say goodbye, whereas I held Dad's hand every single day and was with him for all the moments until he took his last breath. So it was quite, and at the time I was only 16 years old. Then just after Dad's funeral, I had 2 weeks, and then I was straight back into my leaving cert year. So part of me was like back into distraction, but then I was also like, I can't believe I've got this huge year ahead of me, and I haven't got my dad or my brother to help me and to support me and to keep me going.
Did you find being there with your dad helped? I know it was different because, you know, Marcus was gone, you didn't get a chance to say goodbye. Getting that chance to say goodbye, did it help you in the grieving process, do you think?
See, it's a really funny one, because when it comes to Marcus, my last memories of Marcus were him going out the door to rugby training, and our, like, us hanging out together and being in the house.
And nice memories.
Yeah, like Marcus in good form, Marcus looking really well. And then even when Marcus was laid out, I have to say, he still looked like Marcus. He didn't, he looked like, I remember seeing him after surgery, they, when he initially died, they actually let us go see him and they put him into this lovely room. And I remember walking in thinking he genuinely looked like he was asleep and nothing really had changed, except he had one kind of freckle slash birthmark in his face that he didn't like. And he used to say to Mum, I think I might get that removed. And Mum said, you don't be like, it's lovely. It's like, you know, it's a lovely mark. And then he was like, no, I don't really like it. And he lost it in the crash somehow. So we were like, well, the one thing he didn't like is gone now.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, we don't know how, because it was like literally a freckle on his face, but it was gone. So we were kind of like, oh, he'll be happy about that. But Dad, though, it's kind of difficult because sometimes, because he was so sick, he faded away in front of my eyes. So sometimes my memories of him are sick in a hospital bed.
And sad memories, yeah.
Yeah, but then I'm glad I was with him when he died, because I got to be there for that moment and I was holding his hand. And I know that, at, you know, I was the most important person in his life, and I knew that in a way I was handing him over to Marcus. So for me, it was a really special moment. So they're both very different, but yeah, I suppose I am glad. But then I wish I was with Marcus when he died. But then I'm happy I saw him walking out the door to rugby.
Mm, I get you. Was it quite difficult then to put these words down for a book, or what made you decide to do a book? I know you kept diaries.
Yeah, I kept diaries even from before Marcus passed away, because I was just always a writer. I think I've always been a kind of creative person. And when he died, I found my mum's grief was so bad and my dad's that I couldn't really express myself and say how I was feeling to my family, and I didn't really want to upset them anymore. So I started writing it all down in diaries, and it's the only way I could get it out. What happened was, when Marcus died, people dropped in books to my mother, and they're all books about grief and loss, and they're all written by psychologists and people that were really in the know. But I found the language of them was so difficult that I couldn't understand them, and I used to have to nearly get a dictionary to read them, and I thought just I couldn't do it. So I was like, right. And that day, I can remember that moment, and I said, someday I'm going to write a book for young people about grief, and I'm going to write it as a young girl who's loved and lost, and I'm going to write my own story and to let people know that, you know, this is how I feel, and, you know, if you feel the same way, it's totally normal. And yeah, and that's how it happened. And then it became a case of putting all the books together last year, and all the diaries, and going through them all and basically putting them all into that book.
Yeah, it's awful to think that you'll ever write a book about losing your brother, and at such a young age especially, and losing your dad. How are you now? I mean, it's awful to say, life goes on and you have to get on with your life, but I'm sure it has been really difficult. But how's Mam and everything now?
Oh, Mum's great. She's like an absolute warrior. She's an amazing woman, and I just think she, for me, is kind of my inspiration. We went through some really, really difficult years, both individually and also together, but I remember it was took me a good 10 years to like really deal with grief, and I found that when she was strong enough, then she was able to help me, and we were able to help each other. And now we've really good conversations about it. We talk about Marcus and Dad all the time, and people often kind of wonder, the way I talk about my brother, people are like, "And oh, where's your brother?" And I'm like, "Oh no, he's actually passed away." I kind of talk about him like he's still here.
Yeah.
I always share loads of memories. I love talking about him and about Dad as well. Mum, I said, yeah, she's super now, and we're both getting on with life, and we both realise that you just have to get to the stage of acceptance, and there was no point living in the past, because, to be honest, Marcus and Dad wouldn't want that, because both of them, I know Marcus is only 18, but he did so much in those 18 years, and he absolutely loved life, and my dad really loved life as well. And
had a plan.
Yeah, and did, and really like wanted to be a vet, wanted to get married, wanted to have six kids.
Six kids, my God.
Had the design actually for his house drawn out that we still have at home, so we say maybe someday we'll do it, one of us. But yeah, the big house, and he wanted this, he knew what car he wanted, and I think he even knew who he wanted to marry, like he had it all planned out. And yeah, and there's so much things he wanted to do. So for me, a big thing is to live my life, and but also do things that he never got to do, and like Dad as well. Like, my dad loved travelling and loved just kind of, I think the expression YOLO is sometimes made for him, like, and I tried to do that, like, you only live once, and I try to embrace as much as possible. And the moment I realised that crying and being sad is, you know, you have to do it, it's part of the grieving process, but you also have to move on with your own life, because, you know what, we only get one life, and you might as well make the most of it.
And you were so young when this happened as well. Did you go for counselling or anything afterwards?
Yeah, I did. I've been to quite a few counsellors over the years, and I just found, for me, and I've said this to people before, I've had friends who've gone to a counsellor like, oh, that was no good, that did nothing for me, whatever. And I'm like, no, you have to kind of go and try again, because you kind of have to find the right counsellor for you. And there were certain counsellors I went to that I didn't connect with at all, and I didn't work for me. But I never gave up, because I knew I needed that help, because at the end of the day, they were professionals. And I did find more than one that were very good and very helpful and, you know, life changing. And I found I worked better with men, because I lost the two men in my life. I lost the most important men, my brother and my father, the first two men that I ever fell in love with. So I found that male counsellors for me always worked very well, because I think I could connect to them, because that's what I was missing in my life.
Yeah, that's interesting. A very interesting point, actually. Because some people would say, oh, can you not just talk to a friend about it? But I mean, a friend is great if you can talk to, but I think there's something about talking to a stranger as well, isn't there?
It's funny, isn't it? You could sit down and you'll tell a stranger your life story or your deepest, darkest secret, yet your own friends, you'll be like, oh no, how are you getting on? I'm fine.
Grand.
Yeah, I'm grand, not a bother me. Now, I do have some superb friends that actually know by me. They just look at me and they're like, what's wrong? Those friendships are just the ones that I really look after, because they're the ones who just, or even I have friends I know when I am down, I can just send one text or WhatsApp and be like, having a really crappy day, and then they just say one thing back to me and I'm like, okay, just lift me.
Because you don't want to be the Megan whose brother died.
Yeah.
Do you know the girl, oh, that's the girl whose brother died in the car crash. Do you find around birthdays and anniversaries, that kind of thing, Christmas, that it's tougher for you?
Yeah, I have to say I'm still not a big fan of Christmas. I am working on it. It's something I try to do, because actually Dad and Marcus both loved Christmas. Birthdays are tough. Anniversaries are extremely tough. Actually, Marcus's birthday is Valentine's Day. So anytime I've been in a relationship, I never really enjoyed celebrating it, because I'm like, oh, I don't know, it's weird, it's Marcus's birthday. But what we did was for his 21st, we went up and popped a bottle of champagne at the graveyard and we all had a bit of champagne. So that was lovely. I actually have a chapter in the book all about those events and how to get through them and how to get by them. Like now what we, for a couple of years, I think I didn't let Mum put up a Christmas tree for 5 years after Marcus died. And then I turned around one year and I said, you know what, Mum? I said, he loved Christmas. I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, let's do this. So we went all out and put up two Christmas trees and put up all the lights. And
yeah, but it took that time. It took that time. Talk to me now about what you're doing now. You're a great speaker. My God, she's an amazing speaker. You've been speaking in public.
I have. I've been so lucky, and that's the one thing the book has done for me. It's opened so many doors and avenues. I get invited to schools. I get invited to loads of different events to speak about my story. And I was very lucky back in January to be at Balance Expo, and I think there was over 1,000 students there, and I was given 40 minutes on stage, and it was just so wonderful. And you know, a lot of people messaged me afterwards, and I love that too. And I'm very good to interact on my social media, especially when it comes to issues about my book or maybe issues about grief or things like that. And I love talking to people about it. A lot of schools now, which I think is wonderful, are having like wellness week, celebrating wellness and getting people in. So I've been invited by quite a number of schools actually all around Ireland. I travel, I don't just go to Limerick and Galway, I go outside as well to talk to the students about my own story.
But it's great that you're using your social media to do worthwhile things. So many people just use it for rubbish.
Yeah, I just think social media sometimes I look at Twitter and I just think, is there really any need to put that tweet out? Is there really? There's so much negativity in the world as it is. Like, do we really need to say those things? And I try my best just to keep mine about my work that I do, but also like little things. Like if I see something nice, I'll share it. I don't believe in negativity, and I've been there. Like sometimes I see a tweet and I go to reply and I'm like, no, don't do it, because you're only going to put a negative thought into your own head and create more negativity. So I try to be as positive as possibly can. And there is times I go on social media and I'm like, I'm just going to delete all of this, because you know, it might be one tweet you see that kind of upsets you. But I'm like, no. Even on the way to Dublin, I was going on the train and I was admiring all the farms on the way up in the countryside. I was like, these are amazing. Like, someone had a really good fencing up and I was so impressed by it. And then I was seeing these mad sheds and I was like, wow, these are lovely, huge farms. Like, I come from a farming background. I was getting really excited and I just was like, you know what, we've such a lovely countryside. And I actually was tweeting out me like, how beautiful is the countryside? And it's just little things like that.
Yeah. Doing good instead of always being negative. Yeah. I love it. Listen, Megan, it's so nice to have you in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in. It's Megan Scully. The book is called My Journey Through Loss and Grief, Broken Love. It's kind of a purpley cover and it's got a butterfly on the front, so you'll definitely see it. A great read as well. Very easy to read, but tough as well, obviously, because of the subject matter. Thanks so much for coming in. And by the way, Megan, you're very welcome to the Classic Hits team. I know you're going to be doing our Irish show as well.
Yes, I'm so excited. And oh, I have to say, from the first time I walked in here, I just felt like, you know, you walk into a place and you just feel like home.
Yeah.
And I just felt so welcome and everyone here has been great and I'm so excited to get stuck in and to get going, and we're going to have so much crack agus ceol on the show.
Thanks so much, Megan. This is Something for the Weekend on Classic Hits.